KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
So I am in the East Lake neighborhood of Oakland.
Glen Park.
Rockridge.
I live in West Alameda.
Coming up, voters in San Francisco have the chance to help slow the tide of evictions with free lawyers.
It's so critical to have an attorney for your trial, because a lot of the cases really are just seeing, will the tenant cave?
Then we continue our series of interviews with San Francisco's mayoral candidates. Today, Jane Kim.
We must subsidize housing again. It is a very different type of good than something that you just might buy at a store.
And we'll kick back in the grass with the Golden Gate Park Band.
It's just a good time to be outside and listen to great music.
That's all coming up next on Cross Currents. More than 1,600 San Francisco renters received eviction notices last year. Some of them fought back in court, but many, even those who had a good case, gave up and moved out because they didn't know their legal rights. That could all change in June as voters consider Proposition F, which would provide free legal help to anyone facing eviction. If Prop F passes, it would be a watershed moment for a growing national movement. Cities across the country, especially those with housing shortages, are making legal counsel a basic right, not just a privilege for those who can afford it. KALW's Andrew Stelzer reports.
Any old Wednesday, walk into the Hayward Hall of Justice, and you'll be smack dab in the middle of the Bay Area's housing crisis. Eviction court.
So if you're a tenant and you don't have an attorney and you're here for mediation, feel free to check in with us.
Today, there are 48 cases on the docket, so there are three different kinds of people milling around waiting their turn. We've got the landlords and property managers like Jonathan Fleming.
I'm in court every couple months.
There are lots of nervous tenants like Vanessa Bulnes.
We'll find out today what they're offering, and if we don't come to a resolve, then we'll have a jury trial probably on Monday.
And then there are the lawyers, two types. On the owner's side, they're well paid, but on the tenant's side, they're usually volunteers or work for nonprofits, like attorney Joe Colangelo.
People just don't know their rights. I wouldn't even know my rights if I hadn't been doing this type of work.
Colangelo is with the Eviction Defense Center. His clients qualify for legal assistance paid for on a sliding scale because they're low income. He says they're almost 90% Black or Latino, and without his legal guidance, many of them would have to leave their homes and their communities.
Without my organization or organizations like ours that do this work, it would be a stampede of people of color leaving, and we're all that stands in the way.
These eviction cases are life-changing dramas that play out in courthouses across the Bay Area and around the country. And wherever you go, there's an imbalance. Most landlords have lawyers, while studies show only about 10% of tenants do.
And as a result, a lot of tenants lose in eviction cases, even if there was no merit to the case at all.
That's attorney Dean Preston. He's executive director of the statewide advocacy group Tenants Together. And he's the chief proponent of the Right to Counsel measure, which will be on San Francisco's June 5th ballot.
Everyone deserves right to counsel in the same way that people deserve a public defender, regardless of what they're accused of.
If voters approve Prop F, anyone facing eviction in San Francisco would be entitled to an attorney for free. The city already budgets about $2 million per year to help low-income tenants in eviction proceedings, but that's not enough to provide legal counsel to everyone who needs it.
It's so critical to have an attorney for your trial, because a lot of the cases really are just seeing, will the tenant cave?
Attorney Carolyn Gold runs the Landlord-Tenant Program at the Bar Association of San Francisco. Last year, their pro bono lawyers represented 642 tenants facing eviction at settlement conferences. That's less than half the total eviction notices issued in the city. She's the first to admit it's not working.
You cannot depend on pro bono to make sure that everybody will have an attorney.
The way Prop F is written, there are no specifics about who exactly would provide the legal assistance or how it would be paid for. Just that the mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development has 12 months to come up with a plan. This was a strategic move. Keep it vague and let elected officials figure out how to structure and fund the program. The city controller estimates Prop F could cost up to $5.5 million annually. That price tag is the main ammunition being used by the measure's opponents. Charlie Goss is spokesman for the San Francisco Apartment Association.
The idea of eviction defense for tenants sounds good to some people, but if they were to look at the details...
Goss says taxpayers shouldn't be paying for lawyers to represent wealthy people, and not everyone facing eviction deserves the help of city-funded lawyers.
People are being evicted for damaging the building, being a nuisance for other residents in the building. We don't believe that the city and taxpayers should fund eviction defense for those instances.
But Prop F's advocates point out that most people facing eviction are low income. And even if a small number of wealthy tenants chose to take advantage of a free attorney, the program would save money in the long run.
It costs a tremendous amount to our society when people lose their evictions and lose their housing.
John Pollock is coordinator of the National Coalition for a Civil Right to Counsel. He says spending money to keep people in their homes is a wise investment of public resources.
If they do wind up in a shelter, if they do wind up in a jail, if they do wind up having to apply for public benefits because they lose their jobs, these are all costs that we all pay for, and they're significantly more expensive than paying for a tenant's attorney.
Pollock says momentum behind this issue picked up in 2017, when New York City became the first in the nation to pass a law establishing a right to counsel in housing court. New Yorkers who earn less than 200% of the federal poverty line get full representation. Those with higher incomes get one free consultation with an attorney. New York, San Francisco, and other jurisdictions, which have increased funding for eviction defense in recent years, saw more people able to stay in their homes. Pollock says a 2011 Harvard study found that tenants who had lawyers throughout the entire eviction process did twice as well as those who only got limited legal advice.
They didn't ever pay any money to the landlords. They got more time to move out when they had to move out, and they retained possession of their units at about twice the rate that those who just got legal advice did.
Those numbers are catching the eyes of government officials across the country. Smaller pilot programs and proposals have been popping up in places like Denver, Baltimore, and LA County. So could the right to counsel help address San Francisco's housing crisis?
It's an important point. It's like a linchpin.
Attorney Carolyn Gold says it could slow the exodus of low-income renters out of the city.
You want to keep people housed who have affordable housing because they're in a rent-controlled unit or they're in subsidized housing. If those people lose their homes, you've just compounded your housing crisis because there's nowhere for them to go.
If passed, San Francisco's ballot measure would be the first right to counsel law approved by voters. That could inspire organizing efforts in other cities, across the Bay Area and beyond. For Cross Currents, I'm Andrew Stelzer.
You can find more election coverage at our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Supervisor Jane Kim is one of eight candidates in the race for mayor of San Francisco. She's the first Korean-American elected official in the city. Since 2010, she's represented District 6, which includes Civic Center, Downtown, and Mission Bay. She sat down for a conversation with us, and we asked her to first tell us in 1 minute why she should be the city's next mayor.
Over a little over the last decade, I have served our city, starting out on the Board of Education and the Board of Supervisors, and I have negotiated and won more affordable middle-income housing than any other city legislator, have led the initiative to make San Francisco the only city in the country to make community college free, and have worked to strengthen tenant protections. And I'm running for mayor because I want to continue this work and also address this growing income gap between the rich and the poor and regrow our middle class.
That's San Francisco mayoral candidate Jane Kim. KLW's Ben Trefney continued that conversation for about an hour, and we've chosen part of that to play for you right now.
What do you think would be the best way to address San Francisco's housing affordability crisis?
They're interlinked. But they are also different. There's a housing crisis. There's not enough housing that is being built or exists given the number of jobs that we're creating. And there's separately an affordability crisis, meaning there's not enough housing that people can afford to live in. Now, I always like to talk about bringing a little history into this discussion, which is that there was a time in this country that federal government used to be in the business of building housing, and HUD's budget was larger than the Department of Defense. And between 1940 and 1980, in our heyday, we had more public housing units than people on the wait list. And we used to invest in building housing for working class and middle class communities. And just in San Francisco alone, federal government built close to 6,000 units of publicly subsidized working class and middle class housing. In 1980, President Reagan came into the office under the platform of smaller government, that government should do less and that the market should do more. And he passed then the most sweeping tax cuts on the richest individuals and corporations. And part of how he funded that is by slashing HUD's budget. Now, HUD's budget was slashed by 50%, not just by Reagan, Bush, and a Democratic president, Clinton. And he said the market should take care of housing, the poor, and the working class. 40 years later, we are dealing with the consequences of this policy decision. And in the 1980s, homelessness emerged as an urban crisis in cities throughout the country. And there's a great graph online that you can look at, HUD's budget going down and homelessness in numbers growing in cities across the country. So when we say that housing is a solution to homelessness, it absolutely is. And I spent a lot of time negotiating with developers, looking at back of the envelope numbers, and market rate, the market will never house the poor, the working class, and now, frankly, the middle class in San Francisco because it does not pencil out. You must subsidize their rent or home ownership because the cost of construction and land is just so much more than what you can earn from people that are working in middle class here in San Francisco. So we must subsidize housing again. It is a very different type of good than something that you just might buy at a store.
Well, in this presidential administration and this Congress, probably that's not going to happen at the federal level.
That's correct.
So who subsidizes it?
So the city does do its part, and we have certainly stepped up that effort in the last 3 or 4 years, increasing our revenue for affordable housing. 3 years ago, the voters passed a $310 million affordable housing bond, and that certainly helped. This upcoming November, affordable housing providers, Coalition on Homelessness, and other homeless support networks are putting up a $300 million revenue measure, which will be a gross receipts tax on companies that make $50 million or more. And they want to dedicate it towards housing the formerly homeless, mental health services, and other types of affordable housing. That is going to make a tremendous difference here in the city. But we also have to ask the state to step up. 20% of the nation's homeless count is here in the state of California. It is not just a San Francisco issue. And San Francisco will never solve this issue on its own. Not when Marin County refuses to have a 365-day shelter system. Everybody needs to step up, and I really believe that Sacramento should be leading California out of our housing crisis with a statewide plan on how we can build more housing and address homelessness.
Do you agree with Senator Wiener's plan to mandate housing zoning requirements in cities?
I would rather that Sacramento provided more funding to cities to build affordable middle-income housing and have us figure out where to build it and how to build it. I'd also be open to the state setting goals for cities and counties and saying, if you don't meet those goals, you're going to lose state funding in these different pots. Dictating how that gets built, I think, is very heavy-handed and not the way we build in our neighborhoods and our communities.
How would you want to build in San Francisco then, if you want to build more housing?
The way that we've been building in the district that I represent. My district is doing 80% of all of San Francisco's residential and commercial development and over 64% of all of San Francisco's housing. And I'm very proud of the fact that we're also building over 50% of all of San Francisco's affordable housing. I have supported height and density in the district that I represent, but in exchange, because when you confer value onto land, so for example, when I give developers the capacity to build one extra floor or 10 extra floors, I'm basically giving developers money because that's one or 10 extra floors of units that they can now sell on the market or rent on the market. So if I'm going to give you value or money, I want you to share that back with the community by building higher percentages of affordable and middle-income housing.
Now I have a bunch of kind of quick questions.
Okay.
This is the lightning round.
I'll try my best.
Legalized adult-use recreational marijuana, good or bad?
Good.
Charter schools versus conventional schools?
That's a hard one to answer.
And you were on the Board of Education.
I support our existing charter schools. We have great charter schools like Gateway and Life Learning Academy on Treasure Island. What I don't support is for-profit management charter schools that have decided that they can make a profit out of education.
The Golden State Warriors coming to San Francisco.
I support it.
Development in SoMa and Mission Bay.
I support development as long as we ensure that this development benefits the residents of San Francisco with more parks, public transit, and affordable middle-income housing.
The Central Subway.
I support it.
How mid-Market Street changed during the Lee administration?
I think it's important that we vastly reduced a corridor with the highest commercial vacancy rate as of 2010, 2011. So I think it's great that we're reusing buildings that had largely been vacant for offices and creating jobs. However, we certainly have a lot more work to do.
What sort?
Well, one is, of course, ensuring that the revenue that's being generated on this corridor is more evenly distributed to all workers and, of course, to the small businesses in the area. And we have to continue to step up our efforts to increase safety on Market Street.
Another question, electric scooters.
They look fun, but they need to be regulated and they need to abide by the same set of rules that everyone else has to.
The San Francisco Chronicle.
That's a very long pause. As you know, I recently responded to a set of questions from the Chronicle. I want it to be a better paper. And actually, the one thing I will say is this. I wish that our newspapers were able to invest in long-form writing. I really miss that here in San Francisco. We have a lot of great short articles, but we need more magazine-style reporting and investigative reporting here in San Francisco.
City College of San Francisco.
Love City College of San Francisco. I'm excited to have been part of the leadership that has now made City College free and that has made San Francisco the only city in the country to have made Community College free for all of its residents.
CCSF has really been on quite a roller coaster over the last several years.
It certainly has. But, you know, Community College is very important. It is our only lifelong learning institution. I went to Stanford. I went to a great four-year university. But I can't go back to Stanford if I want to take a class to re-up my skills or take a language class. I can't, however, go back to Community College whenever I want to because it is our only lifelong learning institution.
What do you hate most about San Francisco?
Dirty streets.
What do you love most about San Francisco?
The people and the views.
That was San Francisco mayoral candidate Jane Kim speaking with KLW's news director, Ben Trefney. That was just part of their conversation. They also discussed climate change.
I really believe that we need to move towards becoming a carbon neutral city.
They discussed homelessness.
You know, I actually stayed in one of our single adult homeless shelters because I wanted to see what that experience was like.
And they talked about policing.
I want everyone to feel safer when they see a police officer walk down the street. And that's just not the case in San Francisco today.
You can hear that whole conversation at KLW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Although the city of San Francisco was founded in the mid-1800s, many of its civic institutions have only been around since after the 1906 earthquake. At least two older city icons survived the quake. One is the cable car, which has been in service since 1873. And the other one, the Golden Gate Park Band. The band brings to life the Spreckles Temple of Music on Sundays from late April until early October, just as it has every year since it was founded in 1882. Reporter Stephen Short went strolling in the park and brings us what he heard in the story from our archives.
If you stand between the DeYoung Museum and the California Academy of Sciences in Golden Gate Park, you'll see an impressive amphitheater called the Spreckles Temple of Music. It's a typically cool Sunday afternoon, and 150 or so people are sitting on wooden benches as the Golden Gate Park Band warms up in the band shell. The musicians are all wearing red hats and red jackets. Someone in a bright blue jacket addresses the audience as the clock strikes one. Director Michael L. Werkler.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to our concert today. We have a wonderful concert planned for you, so sit back and enjoy.
Community bands have always been part of American life, being most popular in the 19th century. Some started as military bands, and that's true of this one. It was formed to support San Francisco's unit of the California National Guard back in 1882. But band director Werkler says the Golden Gate Park Band has a distinction that makes it different from many of the others.
We are a professional band. We actually have a contract with the union.
It seems like it's a very stable band. Do you have much turnover?
Not much at all. People usually stick with it. And in a lot of ways, we're like the, what do they call it, freeway philharmonic. You know, this gives some people a little bit of their salary, and then they go and play in that orchestra over there and get a little more, and that's how they survive.
Audiences can expect a variety of styles from the band: symphonic, ballet, swing band music, and of course, marches. None of those styles, however, show up on Guy Bellingrath's list of favorites. He likes
jazz, rock, sometimes classical.
But this 8-year-old has another reason for enjoying this outing.
Yes, it's just a good time to get outside. Over here you can just throw the ball around and play football. So it's just a good time to be outside and listen to great music.
Guy's mother, Marisa Bellingrath, like other parents here today, also appreciates the ability to come and go as you please.
We can come in and out of our seats and hear amazing music and enjoy the park.
I've never seen an outdoor concert that had a football intermission before.
Well, for us, it's what makes this concert work.
The band shell is only a short walk from home for Jennifer Jung. She and a friend have 6 children with them today, all under 9 years old. But really, do kids this young even notice the music?
They do. They like it. One was dancing, and then the other was like, you know, clapping his hands to the beat. It was good.
I think it's good for the families.
Kit Kwan also lives nearby. He hadn't planned to come to the performance. He was just out for a walk.
It's actually the music's kind of attract us to stop by. Usually, otherwise, we just go across and go to the Science Museum and then go all the way around the park. It's a great event, and hopefully they can continue.
Performances have always been free, and director Werkler says the band needs help to keep it that way.
We get some funds from Grant for the Arts, which is, comes from the hotel tax fund.
Their support group, the Friends of the Golden Gate Park Band, also helps. And there's another small but cherished income source, which is mentioned before each performance.
There's also our wonderful historic yellow jar. Its purpose is to collect donations. The donations come back to the band so that we can continue with our program of free concerts out here in the park.
But if you don't have extra cash, clarinetist Jofria Whitfield suggests another way you can contribute.
Our previous concert, we played Stars and Stripes Forever for our grand finale, and people were screaming like a rock concert. It was amazing. We just stood there, and I actually got a little teary-eyed just because it was just such a wonderful response. Musicians love that kind of thing. I don't know if people really realize that, but it takes a lot of arduous and long work to learn to play an instrument well. And when people respond in a way that lets you know that they really appreciate it, it really makes our day.
There are few genuinely free community events in the city anymore. So the Golden Gate Park Band is one that really deserves a hand. In both senses of the word. In Golden Gate Park, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
That story originally aired in 2012. You can hear the Golden Gate Park Band perform this Sunday in a special Memorial Day weekend concert. Details are at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Asala Sanipour, Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Zaina Nusser, Truk Nguyen, Andrew Stelzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by San Francisco band Steel and Hammers. They're playing tomorrow night at Hotel Utah. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Basking in the night, taking in the silver, giving up the fight, letting in the starlight, sinking in the sight. Spinning in the galaxy, reeling in the flight. I'll be the moon and I'll be the sea. Laws of attraction, hail with gravity, I feel your power.